Welcome to Trick Talkers, a podcast about trick takers, shedders, climbers, and other card games. We're your hosts, Patrick.
And Ryan.
And Ryan, importantly. Today, we've got a spicy episode because it's a little bit different from what we'd normally cover. And Ryan assures me we've got some great content lying ahead with a few surprises which he's prepared to discuss with me.
Yeah, so I originally had thought of the idea of doing a Ryan Rambles episode for this topic, but I started to think it would actually be a little bit better to have some discussion on it and have another person here. So I wanted to save it for one of our main episodes. So hopefully this goes as well as I was planning it in my head from before.
Nice to have a chat and a cup of tea, isn't it?
Of course, just not during a tea time. This is a regular episode.
Just not during the tea time. This is a normal, regular Trick Talkers episode with a twist.
Yes. So that twist, getting right to it, is going to be talking about cube rails and 18XX games. And before you say, well, those aren't trick-taking, climbing, shedding games at all, why are you going to start talking about them? This isn't an Oops, No Trick-Takers episode. And that's actually because I've been playing a lot of cube rails games online with a lot of players from the trick-taking, climbing, shedding community recently, and have noticed more and more that there's a huge overlap of players that really enjoy both of these style of games. And I started to think about why that might be, and this is where the discussion piece came from. So I think these will be some really interesting bits that I'm excited to share here.
So this is the part where we grill Ryan and we say, what has 18XX and cube rails, Ryan, possibly got to do with trick taking, climbing, and shedding? Please enlighten me, because I'm familiar with the cube rails genre. I have owned some cube rails games and played them, so love to hear your perspective then and what you were going to ramble about.
Absolutely. Before we do get into it, just in case anybody who's listening is not familiar with cube rails and 18XX games, to give the quick spiel on them, these are games all about trains, all about locomotives or choo-choos, if you will.
Choo-choos.
Yeah.
We like choo-choos.
And they're about stocks or shares, as they may be called, where essentially you're trying to buy these shares in different companies in the game and have these different payouts or dividends, as they're usually called. And you're trying to have the most money at the end of the game. So you're buying stocks in these companies. You're placing these cubes on the board, or in 18XX's, you're placing these little hexagon pieces to make routes. And you're going to have your trains run those routes to get some sort of payout. And if you have shares in that company, you get paid personal money for it. There's more to it, but that's like the really simplified version. We might go in more detail as we talk about games, but that's kind of the idea of a cube rail or an 18XX game. So almost absolutely nothing like trick taking, climbing, shedding.
Yeah, that's the point of discussion here, I guess. And just for clarity, I think, just wanted to add, cube rails are often regarded as shorter playing, more distilled versions of 18XX, which generally is a longer experience and more involved for those who like playing games in that particular genre. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that's going to be sort of out of order then, but I'll actually start with that, because that's one of my points that I had as a comparison. Trick-taking, climbing, shedding games are smaller, shorter card games, and cube rails specifically are shorter, almost filler games for some people compared to your normal board game that you might consider like a heavy Euro or something. They're games that are designed to have quick teaches and quick game time. Of course, 18XX games are way outside of that. They're definitely on the heavier end. Most of my comparisons are really more towards cube rails games than 18XX. But I think that one in particular, if you are a fan of these trick-taking, climbing, shedding games, you're used to learning a game in 5 minutes, playing it in, you know, 15 to 30 minutes. Well, cube rails games, you can get maybe a little bit more than that, maybe like a 15 to 20 minute teach, but play in 60 minutes or less.
So what you're saying, Ryan, here, then, just for clarification, is that cube rails are distilled smaller versions of their bigger form, which is probably 18XX is the closest related type of game to cube rails. But equally, you're saying trick taking games. I nearly said trick talkers. That's a classic mistake, isn't it, already? Here we go. Trick taking games, you're saying, are distilled versions or smaller versions of larger games in regards to being filler games.
Yeah, in general. I mean, I don't think there's a specific larger game that a trick taking comes from, but just the idea of them being smaller and what gamers call filler games. Both of those, I think, fit that. And I've heard people refer to Cube Rails games as more filler games of a larger game night.
That's interesting you say that. So I'm going to hold my breath for a second because I want to see what else comes out of your mouth. Because this is, I like where the conversation's going. And I'm interested to see what, where you're going to take it to, how far we're going to go down this train rabbit hole or tunnel.
Yeah. So the next one is, once you know the main system, all you need to learn are the twists. So one thing we talk a lot about when we talk about all of our these trick-taking, climbing, shedding games on the various episodes is mentioning how a trick plays. We don't need when we talk about rules of a game, we never really re-explain must follow, may follow, because at this point, if you're this far into the show, you already explained that. You know what that is.
You probably know.
And if
probably
you
follow us.
Of course. And if you have played trick-taking games before, after you've played your 10th, 15th, 20th, you know the main thing. All you need to know is, okay, what's the twist? What's the variant that makes this game different than the others? You can skip past the here's how you play a trick, here's what trump is, all of those normal words that are actually jargon the first time you play. Well, Cube Rails and 18XX does a very similar thing. There's always that main core system, and it's just, okay, how does this game have a different twist? You know there's going to be companies, you know you're going to have stocks in them, they're all going to have their corporation turns, they're all going to take a turn running, you have your own personal money that's separate from the corporation money. What's different about this one? How is cube placement different? How is, you know, running the company different? Do you buy trains? Do you not? Like, that's what you're changing different. But the main idea and the flow of the game is very similar.
Right, okay. You hope to God that either the game comes with poker chips, somebody brings poker chips, and preferably burn the paper money that comes with the game, right?
Exactly. That's a huge thing with a lot of those games. Most of the rule books even say, like, just supply your own poker chips. And usually if you're getting those games, you already have your own set anyways. You're used to that.
You probably do as you go into that genre. But going back to your point, I can see the logic in terms of what you're saying, in terms of being distilled versions of a wider genre. And I can also get your point. Once you know how to play a trick-taking game, there are exceptions, of course. We've talked about games on the heavier end, like Trick Takers. And if you haven't listened to our previous episodes, yes, that is actually a name for a game, one of our favorites. But generally speaking, trick-taking, there's a lot of commonality and overlap. And it's the same with climbers as well. Once you play one of these games, you're saying, okay, what's the twist? Is this like a classic trick-taking game, or is there lots of bizarre twists hidden behind a bit of obscurity? For example, Touchdown Heroes. That's a very obscure little trick-taking game. And I often hear with 18XX and having played some Cube Rail games that, yeah, there's a little twist that's slightly different, but the core of the game's the same. The theme, there's trains, right? That's definitely a commonality here, just like there's cards in trick taking. So I think that's a fair comparison. I think it's a good link. And yeah, I'll give you that, Ryan. I'll give you that.
Okay. So the next ones is where we start to get a little deeper in the comparison. So we'll see how you respond to this.
Okay.
So the next one is the auction mechanic in Cube Rails and 18XX games is similar to a climbing shedding game. Let that sink in there for a second. Okay.
Right. I'm just processing.
Yeah. Now, that's a very small portion of the game. But the fact that whenever you auction a share off in most of these train games, one person is choosing a company and putting a share up and then bidding a specific amount of money to try and win that share. So imagine your money is a card. because when the next person has to bid higher, they have to bid higher than what was previously bid on or played in this sense. So if I put out a blue share and I bid $2 or I play a two, the next person now has to play a three or higher. And we go around the table all playing higher or passing until the final person wins that share or wins the quote unquote trick and takes that share in front of them. So it's a very similar mechanic and flow that we are familiar with in climbing shedding games. And I think it's just a fun thing that when you're playing those games, you may not realize it, but that similarity might be something that you find enjoyable in that game. And it's almost a mini game within the main Cube Rails 18XX games.
Right. In games like Teach You or Climbing Game Scout, you're trying to play higher cards than the person who went before you. And equally, what you're saying is in an auction environment, that's the same kind of feeling, sensation when you're bidding on companies, trying to win companies and having to then put more of your paper money into the ring, toss it into the ring, and hopefully you will win. So I get what you're saying, and that feeling for you then is similar, and I can see, having played a couple of Cube Rails, where you're going with this. So that's, I never thought you'd say an auction similar, but now you're saying it, and I don't know whether you've lulled me into it, but I can see your perspective. I can see the relevance.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that's another side conversation, is that a lot of people will say, you know, trick-taking games are just auction games. Whenever you're playing cards, you're auctioning, you know, try and win the trick you're paying. So that's how it is another similarity, because this is literally an auction.
Okay. And so expanding on this a little bit, so an interesting point then, auctions in train games, sometimes, for the most part, they're known information. So for the majority of train games, you know how many stocks are out there. You know exactly how many companies are out there, and therefore you can crunch on it and you can do the maths. Are we saying then, bringing that into the trick-taking environment with the cards, when there aren't any cards taken out, that's all known information as well. So there's a parallel there. And also, bear with me, Irish Gauge, for example, which perhaps we'll talk about a little bit, has cubes in a bag where you don't really know. And that, again, parallels the trick-taking in the sense that sometimes some cards are taken out.
Mm-hmm. And it gives you that sense of some hidden information, some public information, and then remembering once something has been played.
Interesting, yes. And the thing is, with cards, though, of course, it always tends to feel a little bit less mathy, albeit you could card count and you could crunch on it. Whereas in train games, it strikes me that doing the math is quite important because, of course, an hour or two later, you could be over a barrel, as they say.
Yes, yeah. The train games definitely require a little bit more math than most trick-taking card games in general. I think unless you're playing Tricky Time Crisis, where you have to add up all the hero values.
Add up all the numbers. Pin try combo, I've heard that's quite mathy.
That's true. That one's got a lot of counting involved. But still nowhere close to most of the math and dividend payouts, the subtracting, rounding up, or rounding down that you always have to do.
That's the thing. I made a dividend board once, cut a bit of cardboard out. Took me a very long time, but it makes a big difference when you know what's going to pay out and when.
Yeah, it's very helpful if you have one of those boards. And I know 18XX games, because they are very long and repetitive payouts and things change ever so slightly. And it's nice to have that board just kind of stay instead of having to recalculate your route every time. You just look at that.
Exactly. But your position here then is more from a Cube Rails perspective by the sounds of it.
No, the auctioning in general, the way you're buying the share, can happen in both games. It's the same process. And this is most of these things I'm explaining are all generalization terms because, of course, you know, that twists. The twist makes things different. Some games might be you auction things differently than that. But for the majority of the games, that's how the auctions work.
Yeah, these trick takers, we say, what's the twist? And we reveal the twist. Oh, you can see all the card backs. Or, oh, in this game, you don't know what cards you're playing. You play them face down and everybody gets the table and goes, oh, that's neat. If you're into trick-taking, you're probably really going to appreciate some of these little twists and nuances in the games. And equally, I can see if you're far down the rabbit hole into train gaming, which Ryan might be on the cusp of it. I don't know. This is a change, man.
I mean, I've been playing these games for quite a while, and as you can tell probably from the conversation, I'm more heavily on the Cube Rails than 18XX. I've played maybe 5 or 6 18XX games, and I don't really care to revisit them, whereas Cube Rails, I can't get enough of them.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you why then, but before that, were there any more comparisons that you wanted to make between the trick-taking genre, climbing, etc., and these games?
Yeah, there's one more. And that one is, both of these style of games have a very print and play or do it yourself model. Most card games, you know, they're usually just a standard deck of playing cards or easy ways to find proxies or make print and plays, because all you need are a deck of cards and you're ready to go. Maybe a couple of chits here and there, which is the do it yourself bit. But the same thing with 18XX and Cube Rails. There are a lot of these games that are specifically made as print and plays, and the files are just put up and you're expected to just print out this really, you know, crappy looking board that has almost no art on it. And that doesn't matter because it's all about the game. And there's, I mean, like the Winsome games, there's one which I'm going to talk about here shortly, Stellar Gauge, that is only available in print and play. And a lot of these Cube Rail games that I own, I think maybe 4 or 5 that I have made myself. Printed out the boards, printed out the stocks, just cut them all up, laminate them. And there are a lot of games that have that. So it's a huge connection. I feel like if you're someone in the trick-taking world who's been used to making some of your own games and you like that arts and crafts bit, you might enjoy doing it with Cube Rails or 18XX games.
Right. And if you're somebody like yourself or someone who's interested in buying games from Japan or abroad, they don't always come in English. And sometimes you have to do paste-ups, and of course that's where the art and craft comes into it. A lot of the times some of these games aren't available at all because they're sold out and out of print, so therefore you have to improvise and create your own versions. So I can understand why you make that comparison. Do you find, though, because obviously a lot of games are available at retail as well,
And of course, if they are, you know, we still strongly recommend support the publishers, designers, and everybody. If you have the means and ability to buy the actual game, do it. But as you said, a lot of these games aren't available anymore. They're out of print. They're not easy to find. So you just never have another option. And actually, that's a sort of another, you know, bonus comparison that I didn't have written down. But I think actually makes sense, is that a lot of these train games, as well as, you know, trick-taking card games, there are so many that are, since it is such a small niche part of the hobby, that they aren't widely available. Their copies weren't made by the thousands when they were printed. There's only maybe a couple of hundred of them. So you can't really have access to play the game unless you have pictures you got from somebody and could make your own print and play from that.
Yeah, and then it's trying to convince people to play it. It's fine, I've curated it. The only thing I will add there, though, is train games, of course, it's all about the game, like you explained, Ryan. And I think it's easy to overlook them and look at the design and just sort of say, oh, well, it's a train game. It's not very pretty. It's not very attractive. Whereas we're spoiled now with all these beautiful looking trick takers, albeit some of the best trick taking games are ugly to look at, but have fantastic gameplay. So, in terms of train games in general, are there any beautiful train games out there, do you think? Or am I just being facetious?
I mean, I will say the Capstone Iron Rail series, it's all art by Ian O'Toole, who is a fantastic artist. If you know anything about the board game hobby, you probably have heard about Ian O'Toole. Does a really good job with all of the Capstone games. Besides that, yeah, it's hit or miss for that. 18XX games are usually pretty ugly, but I mean, I want to be light on the word ugly because, I mean, you know, art is, of course, objective.
Functional.
Of course. And I'm sure people are like already yelling at me right now because I said the word ugly on them. I personally don't think they're that ugly either. It's just that's a common thing you're going to hear from people, because 18XX games usually care more about functionality and gameplay than the actual art. And it's only really more recently have you seen those games getting newer versions that have prettier art on them.
Right, the evolution of it. And to be fair, I'll give you the Eno tool, the Irish Gauge, Iberian Gauge, for example, in the Capstone series. Fantastic looking games in small boxes. Love it. And also what they've done with Shikoku 1889 is, in terms of aesthetics, a real step up for this particular genre, which I feel is going to help people discover it, because we're all quite, nowadays, gamers are quite picky about the appearance of game boxes, etc. So that's a win for the genre, hopefully, and hopefully that will help more people discover it.
Mm-hmm. All Aboard Games, they're doing a huge thing with the 18XX games. All of the versions of games that they're making look beautiful, from the box cover to the actual components in the game. They look really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to make a point. I've completely forgotten it, but we'll come back to it in a second.
All right, we'll see. We'll see if you can remember it.
Recall it. I was going to say, actually, the game, for example, Innovation, don't know if you ever played it, Ryan, and it's nothing to do with trains, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I've played it a couple of times. It's been a while, though, so I'd be interested to see where this heads.
I was going to say, that game is an example, the Astari series, published version of it at least, of a game that is extremely functional, but the artwork is bare bones, but it does exactly what it needs to do. And in terms of applying that to 18XX games, Cube Rail games, I guess sometimes the artwork can get in the way of play accessibility, teaching the rules. We sometimes see it in trick-taking games. You've got Canaloa, for example, lovely tikis on the cards, but they forgot to flip some of the numbers around, making the sixes and nines hard to read. So that is a problem in some cases with the art, right?
No, the big thing with card games, we talk about the numbers in all four corners, or art covering them up, or the font that you use, or color blindness issues. There are a lot of things that can factor in that when you really start to focus on making the game look pretty, you sometimes forget about usability. So there's a fine line you have to walk, which I think that is where maybe there's the one difference between the train games and the trick taking and the card games. Is I think card games focus a little bit more on having good art, and train games focus more on having good gameplay.
That's, yeah, and of course it depends on the designer, depends on the artist, publisher. Cybepu, we see some lovely stuff from, for example, again, Ian O'Toole, it's hard to fault his artwork. Did you ever see the David and Goliath tin, Ryan, the older version of David and Goliath? Did you ever see the cards inside?
I have never seen it in person, but I have seen pictures.
Because the yellow suit is impossible to read across the table. That is a game where the mice get bigger and the giants get bigger. David and Goliath, I won't need to lecture you on how that works. But usability is completely out the window. So I'll try not to derail this conversation. You see what I did there?
Ooh, there's a train pun.
Exactly. You knew it was coming.
Yeah.
I can't just run out of steam midway through the podcast.
I'm surprised you've gone this far with us. There was another one. I got it. Don't worry. I heard it that time.
But you're on the board now. Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. So,
okay. Choo choo.
That's just lazy. Okay. The main reason why this whole conversation started, why I wanted to do this topic, is because of the game Stellar Gauge, which is designed by Pontus Nielsen. This is Cube Rails in space, and I have now played it 5 times, and the first time I played it was 2 weeks ago, maybe 2.5 weeks ago now, and I played it on a Saturday morning with the online crew that I play that are a bunch of trick-taking players that also like these train games, and immediately after we played it, I already was actually, that's not even true. While we were playing it, I got the print and play files, was getting them all set up. And
wow, you're printing out and building it while you were playing it.
I waited until the end of the game. I had the common courtesy to finish the game. But okay. Once the game was over, I was already in motion to start making the print and play. And within 48 hours, I had an entire print and play all set up, ready to go in a box with the cover printed out, which, by the way, the alternate art cover for this game is fantastic. I will put a link in the show notes so you can see it. It's just so cool. And
is that the one with the alien on the front?
Yeah, where there's a man like in a top hat shaking an alien's hand, and there's, you know, stars and moons or planets in the background.
It looks pretty phenomenal. Like, it looks stellar. I'll give you that. It
does look very stellar. And so, yeah, so this is one that I've been playing a lot in a very short period of time. And the same group that I played with on that Saturday morning all are now in the process of making their own print and plays as well.
Wow.
Because, again, this is a print and play only available, or you can play it online. There's a tabletop simulator or a Steam Top or screentop.gg way to play.
Okay.
And I posted a picture of my print and play on BGG to show, like, hey, this is what it looks like in the physical form.
And checking out.
And Pontus, like, sent me a geek message on it. And it was so funny. He was, like, talking about the different corporations, as they're called in this game, the different companies, of, like, where they were, because it was, like, halfway through the game, of saying, oh, this company's doing terrible. This company has to do that. I hope this company did this. It was really funny, like, how excited he was to talk about his game. And, of course, to see other people playing it.
And so how long did it... You said 48 hours later you had a copy. So anybody who wants to create their own version of this and wants to give it a go, how long did it actually take you then, do you think, in terms of time to construct? Because it looks beautiful. I mean, I can see the picture of it, Ryan. There's a few cubes. Mm-hmm. How long did that take to put together?
I don't know. It's always hard because whenever I'm doing that stuff, I'm usually multitasking. I'm watching a TV. I'm watching something to, like, keep me busy. So it's just mind numbing when I do it.
Okay.
But if I was to give a rough estimate, maybe 5-ish hours. I will say, to caveat all of that, this was for speed to get the game as ready as possible, because I was planning on playing it in person the next day after I finished it.
Okay.
I was going for make a print and play. Doesn't need to be pretty, just needs to be functional. So it's all literally printed on printer paper at home that I then laminated at home and then just cut out and corner rounded everything. I didn't go anywhere. I didn't go to some fancy print shop or, like, wait for anything getting shipped to me or whatnot. That can be a little different depending on how aggressive you want to go with it.
Of course. And hopefully there'll be a retail version at some point. Obviously, it's not something we can speculate on. Well, we can speculate, but we can't guarantee anything.
Yeah, I hope that there's an official version. If there is, I'm 100% prepared to buy it. So I guess to just talk about it a little bit, because technically we're not a train podcast, so I don't want to spend...
not a train podcast. So people are thinking, where's this going in terms of trick-taking then? You made some comparisons.
And that's about kind of where it ends. The game at this point is just to talk about how awesome this Cube Rails game is. Stellar Gauge is actually a good combination of both Cube Rails and 18XX Lite, in a sense.
Okay.
It takes the best of both worlds, in my opinion, from those games and puts it in one. And it puts it in space. So if you like space theme, that's going to be a plus for you. But there's a couple of things which are the twists to this game as we're talking about. Well, the big twist you have is wormhole technology, which is super cool. In Cube Rails games, whenever you place your cubes down from a corporation or a company, when it's their turn, you typically have to place adjacent to previously placed cubes. So if you have the blue company and you're starting off on the left side of the board, you have to make your way to the right side of the board one cube at a time.
Like a track.
Like a track, exactly. Like you're building, you know, railway. Well, in this game, your company or your corporation can have wormhole technology, which allows you to just jump wherever you want. You can just say, nope, screw it. I don't need to be adjacent. I'm just going to go all the way over there.
Sounds wild.
Absolutely wild. Now, of course, this is extremely expensive to do, as it should be, because it's super powerful. So you're going broke if you go way too far, or maybe not even be possible.
Too many wormholes. That's life's problems.
But it creates this really cool dynamic in Cube Rails games that you don't see in others. Because normally, like, it's a race to get certain things. Once your cubes are placed, you're usually blocking at another company. A lot of times there's limitations to the number of cubes that can go in hexes. This is, again, all generalization, but for the most part, a hex can only have two cubes. After that, no other corporation's cubes can go there. So if blue and yellow both go up in this, you know, upwards direction, and then the red company's over there trying to go past, they're blocked. They can't. But with this game and wormhole technology, you can just jump right over them. And now you're back in the game and you're moving on. So it's a really cool twist that gets added to this game.
Is this one a game that you would recommend to get into? Blend of... It's weird because you're saying it's a hybrid cube rail on 1886.
I wouldn't recommend this as your first cube rails game at all. If it's your first 18XX game, maybe.
Maybe. Right.
But because it's such a weird mashup of both of them, I think this one's better to be seen as you've played a few cube rails, some lighter ones beforehand, and you've enjoyed them and you want to see what else can be offered more on the heavier side. Because as I mentioned earlier, cube rails games are usually quick teaches, quick game time. This is not going to...
Like Trick Takers.
Yeah, just like exactly like Trick Takers. This game will not fall into that category. This is going to be closer to an 18XX game. You're looking closer to like 2 hours minimum gameplay, probably closer to 3 or 4 if it's your first time playing. And a teach is going to be probably 30 minutes. If there's any questions, potentially more.
Okay, I appreciate the context. I'm happy now to take the wormhole back to your prior point where you were going to... Let us know the other.
Yes.
Because we've got the wormholes.
Got the wormholes. Now, what else are we going to do in space? As we mentioned, there's an alien on the box cover. Well, that's because there's a lot of aliens in this game. The aliens work where there's hexes on the board that are just alien spaces. And whenever you place one of your company's cubes on that space, you can sign what's known as the agreement or the alien agreement.
The agreement. You need like a sound effect now. The agreement. It's a bit Halloween-ish, I know it's gone, but take it.
The way the agreement works is almost a push-your-luck element, because the second you place a cube there, you have to decide right then and there if you're going to sign the agreement or not. If you don't, you can't have the opportunity to sign the agreement until you go to another one of the alien hexes. And it's possible you just don't get to another hex in the game, depending on how the game plays out. You might not have that option. The thing is, the longer you wait to sign the agreement, aka the more alien places you go to, the better your payout's going to be at the end of the game.
Oh, push your luck.
Yeah, like I said, you're sort of pushing your luck on waiting. Well, okay, I have 3 now. If I get 2 more and I go to 5, the jump is like exponential between the two. So you really want to do it. But maybe your company only has 4 cubes left and it's going to take 8 cubes to get to those spaces. Well, now you've got the wormhole technology. You can just jump and get there. But does your company have enough money to do it? Maybe you just say, okay, I'll just take the 3, call it a day and not worry about it and focus on something else.
But like taking the trick at the right time. You've got a hand of cards. Let's wait it out for the right time. And before you know it, that time's gone, isn't it? And you realize you should have played the card beforehand. What you're saying is you should have signed your life away and given it to a big green dude in space.
Exactly. I love the constant comparisons you're making to Trick Take. This is great because it keeps it on brand.
You've enlightened me and we're keeping it on brand. So hopefully people are potentially thinking of their own, actually. If anybody is listening and does think of some other comparisons that you think me and Ryan potentially have missed on this episode, unless we take a wormhole to the future and we come out with them later, please do let us know. We'll be keen to hear, I'm sure.
Absolutely. If you're a player who is enjoying the card games but also loves cube rails and 18XX, please let us know. I'd love to see how big this small world of these two niches really are, since I do believe there are a lot of crossover with these types of players.
Yeah, because it's easy to get into the mentality, isn't it? Especially for people who don't play Trick Takers, or for people who don't play 18XX or cube rails, isn't it? An us and them kind of thing. But really, we're all just muddling our way through the hobby and having fun and having these social experiences, and there's probably more parallels than we philosophy at this time. I know it's late in the UK now, but there's probably more parallels than we actually appreciate in day-to-day playing games between the genres.
And you know, everyone plays games differently, so the mindset of how you approach something or play something is going to be different, which might make you think of the comparisons or even the contrast, what makes them different from it. Maybe one of the points I mentioned are you're like, no, I don't agree with that at all. That's great. And I'd love to hear what part about it to you wouldn't be the same or again, different, whatever.
we agree about them. It's in general, certainly more mathy, a lot of these games, which is of course important and integral to the game. And a lot of people like that crunch. So if that's you, and to be honest, the aliens have kind of sold me a little bit, I'd give it a go, Ryan. I've always been a bit aloof with 18XX in terms of I haven't tried it. But I have done cube rails as well. They're not for my group, but I like them and I appreciate them. And if I had the right group for them, because that's often the case with all of these games, isn't it? Then I would perhaps retain them and play them and get them to the table and have that experience.
Well, there's certainly a lot of online implementations for a handful of cube rails games. If we can find a way to get some online, make it happen. Like I said, Stellar Gage, you can play online. I'm about to play it tonight, actually. Once we're done recording, I'm playing a three-player game with my parents.
Exciting.
Very excited.
But first thing with excitement, is that their first game of it?
No, they have played twice before now. They were the people that were in person. When I made the print and play, okay. It was because they were coming to visit in person. Well, they were already here over the weekend. So actually, it took 48 hours because they delayed me a little. We played Dune Imperium on the Sunday, so instead of being able to work on the print and play, I was playing that game.
I feel so sorry for you.
What was me? Great. I know.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm super thankful that my parents will indulge me and play these games. I know my mom legitimately enjoys them. Like after we played Stellar Gage, she was really excited to play it the second time because we played it almost back to back two nights in a row when they were here. And my dad said he liked it, but I think he's just more or less being nice and enjoying, you know, playing games with his son. I feel like that's the case with most of the games we play. They're a little heavier for him to fully grok and understand the rules because you can tell he gets a little frustrated during play and he has to like ask a couple times, how does this work? How does this work? But my mom usually groks it quicker and tends to enjoy them and want to play them again a little bit easier or more truthfully.
No, you are blessed in that regard. I mean, I've played a few abstracts with my dad, but normally games, board games in general, go down like a lead balloon with my parents. So I think that's a great thing that you've got there with them. And I know, of course, they play a lot of these trick takers we always talk about with you as well. So I do actually have one cube rail game on the shelf, Ryan, and that is Northern Pacific by Amabel Holland. That's the only cube rail I've retained. I had Chicago Express and Irish Gage, which I think are quite neat, to be fair. They've got a nice little twist, and I do like those games. But Northern Pacific, because it's so, you put a cube down or you move the train. The shared incentives in that game make it really distinct from most cube rails, most train games that are out there. It kind of packs it all down into the space of about 25 minutes, half an hour. And you've got all these different kind of mind games that are going on, which I suppose you could liken to games like, well, just that poker feeling that card games, climbing games have. So to make that comparison with Northern Pacific, it's quite an interesting one as well. You played Norpac?
Yeah, I've played it a couple times. It's always zany, always mean. But very quick. That is absolutely one that I think the original version of the game, if I'm remembering correctly, was the only you just played the one time.
You played it through once.
But then the new version by the Rio Grande Games, when they made it, had variant to play three rounds.
That's right. Mixing up the turn order in between the rounds to keep things interesting as well.
Yep, that too.
So these shared incentives reminds me of sort of when you're teaming up in trick-taking games or climbing games. None come to mind specifically, but you do, okay, maybe Yokai Septic, but you're on teams at that point.
I'd say, yeah, more, it's variable partnerships. So like that's Niet or Moo or
Frank Zoo. Maybe you're using somebody as a, yeah, you're my senior partner, you're my junior partner. You're using them for that round to your own advantage. And Moo is, like you said, you're still scoring independently, but you might need somebody's help in that moment. So it's a lovely little game, and it's a great way to onboard if you have any interest in cube rails.
I also think it's almost like Tindahan. Like you said, you either place a cube or move the train. Well, in Tindahan, you either play a card or you move the donkey to change trump.
Oh, I forgot about that pesky donkey, Ryan, there with the area majority, actually, because having
which
that,
which is not really shared incentive, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it came to mind because I just I unsleeved Tindahan the other day. I can't believe I'm saying it's like unsleeved a game, but I've been finding that won't go down that rabbit hole because we could be here a while. but I felt satisfied when I unsleeved it. So Tinder Hand, great little fruity number.
Yeah, definitely fit back in the box, I'm sure, after that.
That I was glad about.
With the cubes, which actually, you place those cubes as well. So really, you play a card, place cubes, or move the donkey.
So there are cubes involved as well.
So absolutely is a train game.
100%.
Done. And just to toss out a few others, if you really are listening to this now and you're like, oh, I've never really played any Cube Rails or 18XX games, and you want to check out a few others, I'm just going to toss them out really quickly. There's Dual Gauge, which is also by Amabel Holland. That's a little bit on the heavier end, but that's great. A lot of maps. Mini Express by Mark Garretts. There's new maps coming out from Kickstarter, so those will be available with the expansion and everything soon.
Is that on the smaller end?
Yeah, that's on the smaller end.
I'm glad you said that because it's mini, right? I just wanted to make sure it wasn't a false.
It is.
Yeah.
And actually, that one plays really well at two players, which is a rarity for train games. Those typically need three or more just because the dynamic of the games and the shared incentives and the stocks and auctioning and all of that tends to require more players, more than two specifically.
Agreed.
But Mini Express has this really good AI system that works that I'd recommend looking into if you're interested at all. And then there's also Chicago Express, also known as Wabash Cannonball by John Boer, as you sort of mentioned recently.
That one has a really nice little... It's often regarded as the grandfather of Cube Rail games. The box is atrocious. I don't know if they've released another version of it. The box is far too
new
big.
New version's actually coming soon.
Wonderful. I had the prior version. The box is huge, but that game does something really nice with you're moving the gauges, and that is also the number of actions that can be taken every time a player does a certain action. It moves a gauge. When it gets to the end, that action is no longer available. I thought that was a super neat twist, and I was quite enamored with Chicago Express, actually, Ryan, so just throwing that out there.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. I think that's a good one to try and get if you want to start and get in Cube Rails as well. And as I mentioned earlier, there's the Capstone Iron Rail series. There's Irish Gauge and Iberian Gauge that are by Amabel Holland. And there's Ride the Rails and Age of Rail, which are both by John Boer.
All in great size boxes.
Yeah. And that's the ones that are our art is by Ian O'Toole. So they look very pretty. And you've probably heard us say the same designers' names over and over. Amabel Holland and John Boer are like two prolific train game designers. They have made so many that are just played and enjoyed by a lot of people. I mean, Winsome Games, the publisher itself. There's a Winsome Choosome convention that's here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that's just nothing but Winsome Games. And then there's, as I mentioned earlier, All Aboard Games is a publisher that's remaking a lot of 18XX games. I mean, those you just name out a year and you've said an 18XX game.
1855. Should we test my theory? But probably is there, isn't it? 1855. I feel like I have to check now because
I don't think so. Actually, looks like when you search 1855, it comes up with a.
Oh no! There's 1844/1854. Yeah. So I mean, it's close in a year out, right?
But 1830 is one you'll hear a lot. 1846, 1889, Shikoku, as we mentioned. That's like a really good intro one if you really want to try and get into 18XX. 18 Chesapeake is another one. I'm not a big expert on 18XX though, because like I said, I don't really like them. I only played
he likes his wormholes, just this space. Yeah,
you don't get wormholes in 18XX games. Come
silly.
On But I did actually enjoy 1889. I sort of liked 18 Chesapeake, but that was probably more because that's where I'm from. There was a little like crab meeple as the starting player. It was cute.
I had that with Brass Birmingham. It's local. Like, it's the thing, right? But so in terms of a starting point, like you pointed out, Ryan, those games, I'm advocating Chicago Express if you can get it in a smaller size box. Irish Gauge. Amabel Holland said to me on BGG, she said, Chicago Express is probably the better game, but Irish Gauge is distinctly different, that it's still worth trying. You're pulling cubes out of bag the way the dividends pay out. And it comes in a, like we said, lovely sized box. So have a look, see what interests you. NORPAC, Northern Pacific, very, very different from all of those, of course. And like you said, for the two-player experience, the Mini Express is a good option.
And I mean, there are so many more games, just like trick taking, you know, there's hundreds of thousands. So like there are a lot of options. That was just the quick list we named off. Once you search one of those games, if you go to BGG, you can do that fans also like thing. And you'll probably see a lot of other games that are Cube, Rails, 18XX adjacent that you might be able to check out as well. Because you can go down that rabbit hole for a long time.
Down that train station. That doesn't work. One thing, no. Piece of, not. It doesn't work. But one piece of advice, apart from my terrible joke, is try a Cube Rail game. If you like it, try it with your group. Don't go out and buy 5 or 6 Cube Rail games and a couple of 18XX games without knowing whether you've got the groups for them, aka don't do a Patrick. Because I went out there and I bought Irish Gauge, I bought Chicago Express, I had another train game, the name escapes me, and I had Norpac, which Northern Pacific, which just stayed on the shelf. And then I realized, apart from Northern Pacific, I hadn't got the group for it. So before you make that investment, try it out, see if your group like it. And if it's a group that like trick-taking, then there might be, if Ryan's parallels stand up to scrutiny, there might be some magic in there and people might realize, actually, yeah, I can kind of get that sensation and I like it.
Mm-hmm. But don't come to me when that doesn't happen. If your group likes all these trick-taking games and you try Cube Rails and they absolutely hate them, it's not my fault.
As in my case.
Generalization. Yeah. It's not everybody. Yeah. It's quite possible you might not like the other games. Like with every game, of course.
Yeah, some people just... The thing is with my group, some of it was just... They looked at it and they went, oh, it's trains. And that, of course, is just... You don't know how the greatness that's inside this box. What can be discovered, the nuances. And it... If you can't get past that, then you're probably onto a loser. But try it anyway and see what happens.
And if not, you just go back to trick-taking games, which I feel like still a win.
We tend to cover
hopefully
a lot of those.
Hopefully, if your group doesn't like card games and train games, then at that point you need to find a new group.
You're going to say a new podcast, are you?
That too. You probably shouldn't be listening to us, if so, because that's going to be tough.
But yeah, you picture your friends' faces as they sat around the table midway through purchasing dividends in a company that you've never heard of, but it sounds cool, and then jumping through wormholes, and you dream about these things, but you have to then take a step back and say, is it worth the investment? I wasn't trying to do a train pun or anything there. And have I got the time to play it? And what, of course, what game is it replacing? I've tried to become much better at looking at that. And trick-taking in general, looking at the trick-takers I've got and saying, is that going on the S-tier shelf or is that just going to be a trick-taker that's lost to the passage of time?
It's always the golden question.
100%.
Well, hopefully after that, you've been able to figure out if Cube Rails or 18X games might be for you. And if you already are into those, hopefully you can see the comparison and realize, oh yeah, I'm one of those people that enjoys both of these genres of games.
I'm sure some people are feeling enlightened by this newfound knowledge of the parallels between the two. And of course, Ryan, you'll probably be getting requests from people wanting to play Stellar Gauge. Can't even get the name right. Stellar Gauge with you. So that's a positive thing, hopefully.
Yeah, I am 100% down to play that anytime, as well as Dual Gauge. That was before Stellar Gauge, the game that, like, if I'm playing a Cube Rails 18XX-like game, I was grabbing that. So I'm always down to play those if we have the time.
That sounds exciting.
Otherwise, thank you for listening to another episode of Trick Talkers.
And this is where we say, I've been Patrick, and he's been Ryan. I'll let you do the Ryan.
I have been Ryan.
You have been Ryan.
Or... I haven't been Dual Boy this time. I've been Stellar Gauge Boy, maybe.
You have, but I want to know, you've been listening to our episode, but the question to the listeners is, have you signed the agreement?
That's a great question. Only you can answer that.
And if not, then you need to go back and find out what the agreement is because you've skipped to the end of the episode.
I think at this point, people probably just skip to the next podcast. They're probably done with it at this point.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you have any questions, comments, recommendations, or want to mention some of the things that might be a similarity that we missed, you can always reach to us at Twitter, at TrickTalkers or email at TrickTalkers@gmail.com. And we'll put our link tree, which will have all of our other links that you can get access to joining our Discord or whatever else it might be.
And Ryan's now going off into the universe to play with aliens. So we'll leave it at that.
That I am. You can't see it, but I'm doing the Spock hand, the Vulcan.
It's very cool. Sure, some people will appreciate it.
See you around.
See you around.